Hi, this is David Lohr. I'm a senior engineer at Pixar Animation Studios, and you're listening to the Pixar Podcast.
To infinity and beyond!
So, how long is this going to take?
You can't rush art.
What's the point of going out there? They'll only laugh at me.
That's because you're a clown!
Stranger from the outside.
Greetings. You're not the queen. You don't smell like the queen.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
How do you feel?
Squirrel. I feel swell. In fact, I think I feel a song coming on.
Hey, good evening. How are you? Nice to see you. Hey, it's great to be here in your room. Where are you from?
Hello there, Pixar fans. Welcome to another episode of the Pixar Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Clements. And I'm recording this intro on a subway train, so sorry about the audio, but it'll be over real quick, and we'll get on to today's episode. Show notes for this episode are available at thepixarpodcast.com/101. It's 101. And on today's episode, we're going to hear from Monsters University director Dan Scanlon. We're going to hear a roundtable interview that I recorded back at Pixar in April 2013. Next week, I'm going to play for you an interview with Corey Ray. So I hope you really enjoyed this roundtable discussion. And before we get to it, one correction. Last week, we had the 100th episode. Had a lot of fun. Thanks for all those who participated. And I made one error in mentioning how long we've been running the podcast. I started the Pixar Podcast on July 13th, as I said, but it was July 13th, 2010, not 2011, as I said. So for those of you keeping score at home, we've been doing this for almost 3 years. All right, thanks again for listening, and enjoy this interview with Monsters University director Dan Scanlon.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dan.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah.
How are you doing today?
Good. My allergies are not good.
Oh, no.
I don't know if anybody else has that.
I have that.
Yeah. I apologize.
Too bad. It's such a beautiful day to be outdoors. And
I know.
All right.
These chairs are small. I'm going to way down here.
So tell us about the minute that you were chosen to be the director for this film.
Uh-huh.
What was that like?
It was exciting. I was involved. I was lucky enough to be involved as we talked about making this film, mm-hmm. or even just talked about exploring the idea of doing another Monsters film. So I knew and was there when we kind of came up with the prequel idea, and I loved the idea. So to be able to be the person behind that was really great. Plus, I'm a huge fan of the first movie. I came to Pixar the month Monsters came out, and it was the first wrap party I went to. And I went and saw that movie, and I felt like the scare floor looked like the atrium here. I felt like I worked at Monsters Incorporated. So I've always felt this connection with the movie. So to get the opportunity to tell, you know, a personal story with those characters was just a dream come true. And it's scary because as a fan, you know, I want to make a good movie for other fans, but no, it was a great experience.
Cool.
All right, thank you.
why did you guys choose college? Obviously, like, we wanted to know where these characters were coming from, and about their background, but why college? Why not, I don't know, high school?
Yeah.
Or later on in life?
Yeah, we felt that because it was a kind of a coming-of-age story, a story about these guys finding out who they were, we felt like college is such a, or college age, whether you went to college or not, it's such a time in your life where, it's such a time of self-discovery. It's sort of a more adult, mature self-discovery, going from being a kid to an adult. So that felt like the right place to deal with some big emotional stuff. Plus, just the fun of seeing a monster college felt right. And it felt so right for play. But in the first film, there is a line where Mike says, "You've been jealous of my good looks since the fourth grade." And we were aware of it. We realized that was there. So we actually did try the idea of starting the film with them meeting as grade school kids, and it sounded fun. We played around with it for a while, but in the end, we kept hitting a brick wall Well, number one, we didn't want to make the movie Monsters Elementary. We didn't want to... we didn't feel like it would be the characters we know and love, and it wouldn't really be a very... It just wouldn't be a very rich emotional thing. And so that would force us to do is to have them meet and then jump ahead in time. And by that point, you feel like you missed the whole story. Mm-hmm. And so it was really Pete Docter, the director of the original film, and John Lasseter, who kind of said to me, you really have to let it go and do what's right for the story. And in the long run, do what's right for both stories. The spirit of that line, it was only put in there to give you the idea that they'd known each other a long time. And so we felt like you still get that from this. You still feel like they've known each other forever. And so although we always want to be as close as we can and tie the movies up just right, I felt like you still get the right feeling. So we joked that saying... no, you're jealous of my good looks since the fourth grade. It's like, it's an old monster expression. Yeah. That monsters say to each other.
Why did you decide to do a prequel and not a sequel?
I think a big part of it just came out of the idea of wanting to do more with their relationship. And so that just felt like seeing them meet was the best way to do that rather than going forward. And I think that, like I said, then the college idea just seemed really fun. But then we really jumped on to what became the heart of the movie, which is the Mike story. When we realized, wow, this would give us an opportunity to tell a story that isn't told very often in films. We tell the story a lot of if you work really, really hard and never give up, it'll always work out, which is a great lesson, but not always the case, whether we want to admit that or not. And we loved the idea of telling a story for people who've come up against that problem, because we all have. And it felt so universally true, and we were just thinking, what a great story to tell. That kind of became the genesis behind it.
Were there any sort of visual restrictions based on what we saw in the first movie, which was done 12 years ago, versus what you do now?
Yeah. You mean things that we wanted to, visual restrictions, meaning we didn't want to break the feeling.
Yeah, you wanted to have it be continuous with the first one, but...
Yeah. Well, and our production designer, Ricky Nerva, who worked on the first film, we talked about that a lot. We still wanted to look like Monsters, Inc. We wanted to have those really bright, colorful characters. But we are putting them into a pretty realistic world this time around, which we wanted to do. We thought would work really well, but we always went back and checked the first film and really tried to still keep a little bit of that kind of classic look where we could. We always tried as much as we could to be respectful of that, but then to take it further, show us monsters we hadn't seen. But we always wanted to make sure they looked designed as if they were a part of that film.
We talked earlier with the ones that weren't like drawing the office care department, and they were saying that there were a lot of, there was very interesting, but there were a lot of limitations, and I wanted to ask you, in terms of creating new characters and interesting new characters versus having the old characters that we all know and love, how was that process?
We feel like we really love our new characters. We've spent so much time with them now and developing them, and similarly, we wanted to make sure that they looked of the world, that they looked right next to Mike and Sully. And so that was really a big part of what the designers would do, was make sure we were staying in that realm. We spent a lot of time developing these characters' personalities, and so we do the same visually. We really, it's my job to kind of pitch to the artist who this character is, and then they kind of go and try to find visual traits that will go along with that. We spent a lot of time with the main characters just trying to get them just right.
So as I was watching the footage last night and thinking, as I was watching the footage, I was looking at all the plants and thinking, wow, it's gorgeous scenery and all these plants. And I thought, are there monster plants? And maybe that's a really geeky question, but my friend's a botanist. Have you thought about that at all?
There are monster plants. And it was funny you mentioned in the first movie we were looking and we were like, what are the monster plants? We realized there's only one shot of a monster plant in a planter as they're walking to work. It's the only... I think there is also a palm tree. But other than that, and it's this weird ball thing. So we took that one weird ball thing and then mixed it in with sort of familiar bass, and then put those type of things, and then came up with new sort of bizarre looking sharp spiky things throughout. So you can see them in there. But yeah.
Cool.
This may be a bit premature as we're just finishing Monsters U, but do you see the Monsters universe expanding? Will we see Mike and Sully as parents or some of these other characters? Another story like Squishy?
I really have no idea. You're right. We're probably just focusing on finishing this one right now. But, you know, we love these characters, but we don't really know.
Who's your audience? Do you have someone in mind? I mean, it's a university setting, so is there a target audience, or is it just supposed to appeal to... I mean, of course it's supposed to appeal to everyone.
Yeah, and then really that is kind of what we think of. We always... I mean, our audience is kind of ourselves first. I mean, we always try to just entertain ourselves and everyone at the studio who are, you know, big film buffs. So we're always trying to make something that we know we'd want to watch, which more or less kind of is our audience, and then we just hope that it reaches everyone.
What was the biggest challenge as a director? I mean, a director in a regular feature film, one of the biggest challenges are actors.
Yeah.
Dealing with their personalities and everything. You basically control that. What was the biggest challenge?
I always think the biggest challenge on any of these things is the story. It's just, we work on it the longest of anything, and it gets redone and redesigned over and over again. And we do it for 3 to 4 years, so it's really, it could be seen as really monotonous. However, I feel like myself and the story team and the writers, we like to solve puzzles. You know, it's a problem solving thing. So as long as there's always a new idea thrown out that is a good idea, then I'm always ready to dive back in and work on the movie. But it can be maddening, and all the Pixar movies go through it. Every one of them goes through an awkward teenage phase where you just think, what is this? But it's always really helpful. One thing that actually Joe Rampt, who is a story artist here, did for me when I first came here, which was great. We try to do it when we can. We don't do it enough. Was he showed me reels, story reels of one of the old Pixar movies in the middle of the process. So when it was not working, and we started doing that, looking at the old movies, and it's really helpful. And it's also really comforting to go, "Oh, Toy Story was terrible," because these same issues come up sometimes. And so you look and you talk about what we did to fix it, and it was such a great lesson. And I really do want to start doing that again more, because you really learn a lot.
Do you guys have like a time frame, or I mean, Pixar sets up a time frame, or it's kind of like it goes into the development
For the films?
Yeah,
I think more or less there's a sort of amount of time that we do for our films. I think it's like 4 or 5 years, and so we're basically in that arena.
Was 3D an issue for you as a director?
More or less, I focus on just making the film and giving it, you know, we're always trying to give it great dynamic staging that will play either way. But it has been interesting seeing the 3D kind of after the fact, you know, the work that's been done, and just sort of seeing how much it brings it to life. But I don't know that me personally as a director wasn't too involved up front. It was more just making sure that the movie plays either way.
Do you have like a 3D approach or philosophy that the studio has, or that you have?
I think that the studio in general is we tend to, and it is my philosophy as well, it is more of a regressed, you know, picture box style thing than really wild in your face 3D. Yeah.
How did you, one of my favorite parts of the film is just right at the beginning where the pigeon is there, and like I just think it's so simple, but it's such a brilliant way to bring you back into that world. And like, who came up with that idea, and like, how did you choose it? I mean,
I don't exactly remember exactly who, but I do remember a lot of thought going up into that, because as you said, and I'm glad you said it, it's a simple way to get you back in the world, and the other trick is we also have to get you back in the world and let you know that this is before the first film, which we kind of do with Mike and seeing him young. But
But yeah, it was really tricky. We were trying to think of what, you got to have some little fun way to get back in there. But I think it might have been our story artist, Stanley Moore, who pitched a bunch of ideas. And I think he pitched that one. We're like, that's brilliant. That's great. It gets it right off the bat.
What about when you have creative differences in, you know, in terms of the story? Is there a way, is there a way to solve them? Do you have like a protocol for doing that? Or it just kind of goes with the flow of whatever idea wins and fits the other?
You mean if there's like a difference?
Like a strong difference?
Between me
and they're both,
or...
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. You know, I try to find a balance between trusting my own gut and listening to the people in the room and listening to everyone in the room, because there are really smart people in the room. And I don't think you should ever do one over the other. I don't think you should be a director that says, this is what we're doing and this is how we're doing it. And I don't think you should be someone who says, what do you guys think? I have no idea. You know, I honestly think the whole process is uncomfortable. You're constantly sort of standing on a teeter-totter between the two. You really have to listen to both. And so I always tried to do that as much as I could. And usually what would happen is, if I had a gut feeling and people felt strongly, if enough people felt strongly, whether or not I use that solution to the problem, I know there's a problem that needs to be addressed. And if for some reason I feel like, no, it's not, then you can always go with your gut. But I try to always be checking that myself against everyone. But yeah, it's a good question.
Another thing that I really love, you know, is the idea that your friends are not necessarily the people you get along at first, but your friends can also start being your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone that has like the same power as, I think especially for kids,
yeah.
You know, it's a really beautiful idea.
Yeah.
It's a really important idea too, about differences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which monsters, you know, the first monster
dealt with.
Yeah. So I was just wondering, you know, like the creative process behind having those like many different things going at the same time. And, you know.
Yeah, I think we're always trying to sort of set up a theme that we're following, but then there are kind of offshoot themes throughout, and it can be tricky to balance them all and not drown out one particular one. And that's a big part of what makes story hard. It's not always the plotting of it. It's, are we getting our theme across? Are we holding on to our main character's goal? And that stuff you're just constantly checking.
The First Monsters, Inc. has one of my favorite scores of any Pixar film, the great Randy Newman's. It's just so unique, even to his other scores. It's very Randy Newman, but it's very Monsters. And I was really happy last night to hear some of the new stuff. What was it like? It's not just, there are some of the same themes, but there are some new things. I really love the montage part. Just talk about the process of the music.
Yeah, it's been great working with Randy. And like you said, once he started to put stuff down, there's this familiarity. And even though he's not using a lot of the same themes, I mean, it's a lot of new stuff because it's a different movie.
Yeah.
We realize they're in college. They're not these older guys working at this factory laid back. And it's Mike's movie. And there's this, you know, we need a theme for him. We really wanted to make sure we saw this as its own movie as well. And he just naturally has that in him, so it sounds like Monsters. But, but it was fun. It's been great to work with him and to play with, when do you let it be its own movie and when do you intentionally kind of dip into the other film because you want to get people thinking about where we're headed.
Yeah.
But it's been great working with him. He's, you know, and watching, going to the stage and watching him. He still works with 106-piece orchestra all there at one time. So it's a real rare thing to get to see.
Yeah. Are there songs in the movie?
I have no idea. No,
maybe.
Sorry, you caught me off guard.
Sorry.
Anything else you'd like to ask, Chris?
Are there any other like just Easter eggs in the movie that we should look out for that either make reference to the Monsters Incorporated or any other Pixar?
Well, I will say that we've done our duty to follow the traditions, you know, there's always fun stuff to look for in the background, and you know, keep an eye on certain characters. I feel like there are familiar things you'll see. Yeah.
What was your college life like?
You know, I was kind of a nerd. I went to art school, and I worked really hard and didn't do much and didn't have a lot of friends. I was realizing somebody said, who do you relate to? And I said, I think Squishy. Like, that's really sad. I would have been into the Kappa group. But a little bit I relate to Mike because I was pretty driven, but I also got to school and realized, oh, I'm not the greatest artist in the world, contrary to my mother's refrigerator. Like, everyone's really good, and they're way, way better. And it sort of redefines you a little bit. Like, oh, man, I'm not going to ever be as great as these people. And so that emotional punch to the gut, I think I relate to a lot.
Still, even since the beginning of the movie, we see that Mike has this confidence, like inner confidence, that I find fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just also like a lesson, like kind of like you hear your inner voice, even if everything is against odds. You know, like even if you see like bigger monsters and I think also, you know, it's also a beautiful lesson for kids.
But I'm glad you said it, because that is with Mike. You know, we wanted Mike to be sincere so that you would really believe in his dream. But the great thing is, even from the first film, Mike has that. He's just really confident. So we always felt like we never wanted Mike to seem like a sad sack, like, well, no one's letting me. I love that he's just like, what are you talking about? Of course I'm in the class. And he's just going to keep going for it. And if that doesn't work, find a new way to do it. But he's not going to give up. And I feel like that was a really big driving force. And I think it's what makes us like Mike. Is that he's just going to keep pushing forward. He's a ball, and if he gets knocked over, he literally rolls back up. He actually does that for that reason. I mean, that was what we were trying to get across, is that that's his shape.
One more question.
Can you talk about your experience working with the voice cast, with the actors, and maybe casting some of the roles?
Yeah, it was great. We honestly... We had a really great cast, and we had a cast of a lot of fans, Pixar fans, which was great. And not just Pixar fans, but animation fans. So I think that comes across in the film. They're all excited to be a part of this, so they're really giving it their all. And working with John and Billy was great because, in particular, I loved when we get them together on the same day, which they liked to do too because they're friends and they like to play off each other. And then they kind of goof off and make each other laugh. But also, even in the emotional scenes, they get more out when they're together. And so that was fun for me to just sit back and let it go. And the hardest part was just reining them in and say, okay, that's never going to be in the movie. You can't say that. But just letting them, like, go wild. And then Helen Mirren was great because she just... it was so intimidating, the idea of working with someone of her stature and then to meet her, and immediately she's... game for trying different takes on the character. And we did several different recordings on the first session of just different ways to play the character. And I would suggest something and she'd do it, or she'd suggest something. And then when we were done that day, she said, well, if you didn't get anything you like, I'm available on Thursday. Or I could come back Thursday. I'm like, this Thursday? You know, it was just so great that... That we had that, we were able to have that experience. Yeah. I think it shows in the movie that people are having fun. Yeah. Cool.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks. Big fan of Tracy, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, great film. Are you going to do anything with
You've
it?
Seen the film?
I have.
I don't know. No, yeah. It's online. Right.
Cool.
Never really.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay, Squirt here will now give you a rundown on proper exiting technique.
Mom, it's just my ball.
Don't let it happen again.
Yes, well, I'll try to be less careless.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
Whew. It's got this kind of burning, melty, it's not really a smoky taste. It's a certain, it's kind of like a... It's kind of like this boom zap kind of taste. Don't you think? What would you call that flavor?
Lightning?
Don't look at the light!
I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you.
Gone! It's all gone. All of it's gone. Bye-bye. Woo, see ya.
Thank you for listening to the Pixar Podcast.